This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 48.
Hello, welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, Angie shares the secrets of proper recovery after running. And she also answers a listener question about the risk of death during a marathon. And if you'd like to become a member of the Marathon Training Academy and get a jump start on your training, visit us over on our blog, marathontrainingacademy.com, and click on the Join Now page. All right, so Angie, it's good to be back in front of the microphone with you. It feels like it's been a long time.
Yeah, it does for some reason. I don't know why.
Last time we sat down to do an episode, I recapped my first marathon and heard a lot of good feedback from that. I think people enjoyed it. I was really transparent, just bared my soul here on the podcast.
Yes, and a lot of people related to you, the ups and the downs of your marathon experience.
Yeah, hopefully it was inspiring to people. And actually, we have done another marathon since doing that episode. We went out to Indianapolis and we ran the Monumental Marathon in Indianapolis, Indiana. Well, that's kind of a mouthful. But I just ran the half because I was still recovering psychologically from the first.
And you should say it was a pretty good run, too. I mean, for someone who was recovering from a marathon, you had some speed in your legs.
Yeah, half marathons are easy now after going the full distance.
Puts things in perspective a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I ran it in like an hour and 48, which was better. I think the last half marathon I did was an hour and 59.
Yeah, so cutting 10 minutes off a half marathon is nothing to sneeze at. That was great.
I think what happened was I started out with you, and the course was kind of narrow and really crowded, so I kind of lost you at the beginning, but then I caught back up, and we ran together until the full marathoner split off, at which time I bid you goodbye.
Yes.
And you said, as we were kind of parting, we did a little fist bump, and you said, "You're going to get a PR." Because we were running like an 8-minute mile.
Mm-hmm.
And that just stuck in my head. And the rest of the run, I kept thinking, I'm going to get a PR. And I don't know, somehow it gave me the impetus to keep going.
Yeah, you not only got a PR, you just killed it. I was amazed to hear what you had done, especially just 2 weeks after a full marathon.
Well, it really felt easy. I mean, that full marathon was hard. And the half marathon was still challenging, but not at all as challenging as the full, so
it was a lot easier psychologically, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
Thinking,
so.
Oh, I have to go half the distance.
I know. Anyway, it was a fun. I recommend that race to anybody who wants to travel out to the Midwest. They had a good swag.
Yeah, it was nice. They did give you a finisher's stocking cap, which was nice because it was a cold day. I thought the course was a little bit bottlenecked in the early miles.
Yeah, it was.
But, you know, I mean, that's being really picky. I've done a few marathons, so I'm starting to get kind of opinionated in my old age. But but it was a good marathon. It felt a little bit tougher psychologically for me, just because I think it was my third marathon in 5 weeks. And so, you know, physically and mentally, I was a little bit tired. But I still was able to finish in 3:47. So, you know, I was happy with that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Could have been better. Could have been worse.
And now you qualified to be a marathon maniac.
I did, yes.
How do you become a marathon maniac? What's the first level?
The first level is you have to run 3 marathons in 3 months, or you can run 2 marathons in 2 weeks. So I went for the 3 in 3 months, and it ended up being 3 in less than 3 months, but, you know, still, that was what it worked out to be for me. So, yes, I'm excitedly waiting back for my marathon maniac number.
Okay. And are you looking for a race to run in December?
You know, if I know it's good for me, I'll probably just recover. Since it's lessons about recovery, I'll save it and put it in the bank until the spring. We're kind of looking for a good marathon to run in the spring. You know, maybe a good PR race. So, I don't know. I'm still shopping around. Haven't committed anything yet.
So, are you going to keep your miles up higher level than you usually do in your off season?
Well, I'm taking the month of November pretty much just to rest. You know, I'm running around 25 to 35 miles a week. So, you know, but I'm not really putting out a lot of hard effort. just letting my body regain some strength and putting some of the principles of recovery into practice, like I'll talk about today. And then, you know, I'll probably start another training cycle. So, you know, it's important not to constantly be in hard training, or your body is going to break down at some point and you're going to get injured. So even though my mind, I'm already starting to itch for a race and think I need a goal, I need something, you know, I know it's smart to take time off and to listen to my body and recover.
And races are a lot of fun to go to, but you also don't want to jeopardize your health.
Exactly. You know, and so what's recovery for each person will be a little bit different. Last week it was my birthday, and so my goal for my birthday week was to run 33 miles, since that's how old I turned. And I just did it easy, and it was, you know, a fun week of running. But it's still important to have goals, but it shouldn't be a hard goal all the time.
All right, well, I look forward to getting into more about recovery. And before we do that, we're going to read a couple emails that you received.
Yes, this first one says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. I don't know why I haven't written sooner. I've listened to your podcast since I started running over 2 years ago, and they regularly accompany me on my runs. I've gained most of my running information from you. I was a collegiate swimmer, but fractured my spine and herniated some discs due to a swimming injury. After taking 3 years off from any type of activity, I decided I'd try running, which I had always hated as a preseason training for swimming. Somehow, running was different this time. I valued the ability to move, to push myself again, to feel physical and mental pain on my terms rather than injury pain. I became hooked. Taking up running coincided with my graduation from college and moving far from home for a master's degree. Running for me was a mental relief. It allowed me to explore my new turf, to process stress and cases, and to release a lot of new emotions. I decided a half marathon was doable and ran my first one in the spring of 2010 and a second in the fall. I recently moved again and started a doctoral program, so I'm out there again, running to explore my new turf, settle new emotions, and find myself in this new space, with you and Trevor right there with me. I took this year off from races, but I'm taking my first stab at the Disney Full Marathon in January 2012. You both have been right along with me through my training and exploration of this new sport, especially during many times of needed motivation. I feel bad I haven't said hello or thank you before, but I always sort of felt I didn't have anything interesting to fill your inbox with. But a thank you for your contribution to my life and health is worth filling your inbox every day. So hi and thanks. I won't be a stranger from now on. Have a blessed day, Lynn."
Well, thank you for that very nice email, Lynn, and I'm glad that we have been a help to you in your running. And we're excited to hear about your first marathon, and I'm sure you're going to do great. Keep your momentum going. You rock.
That's right. All right, the second email says, "Dear Angie and Trevor, I listened to your podcast last night, the one where Trevor recapped his first marathon. Trevor, I understand you completely, and I laughed a lot, because I just completed my first, the Marine Corps Marathon, on October 30th. First, let me thank you guys for your podcast and website. I'm absolutely certain that it helped me train for and complete my marathon. I never thought I could run a marathon. Everyone has his or her barrier. Mine is a finicky gastrointestinal tract, which frequently forces me to rush to find the closest John, multiple times every run. How embarrassing. Although I'd trained for and run a half marathon before, I was so sick of my problem I had quit running altogether. But still, I had always wanted to try a marathon, and at 50 years old, I felt I didn't have much time to dither one way or the other. Several of my friends encouraged me to run the Marine Corps because it's beginner-friendly, super organized, and a celebration of the Marines. So finally, I took the leap. I started to train in March with a base of 0 miles. Most runs, it was a fight to stay motivated due to my frustrating condition. But I pressed on, busting a gut, so to speak. And as the miles increased, I started heading for game-stopping trouble with my hip and calves. I wondered, with all my issues, if doing the marathon was even worth it. That's about the time I happened upon your podcast, and later your website and training plans. I'm convinced you guys helped me to rescue my marathon dreams. With your advice, I've now incorporated stretching into my routine because it helps. I've completely changed my fueling strategy, starting with an empty stomach, using Hammer Perpetuum, and limiting my hourly intake helps prevent the nausea that used to dog me on every long run. And attitude is absolutely key. You guys reinforce the need to turn negative thoughts around, so even though it's certainly annoying to have my GI problem, it could be so much worse. My marathon experience will rank as one of the top 10 days of my life. Every minute of the experience stirred my senses. Legions of fellow runners, some with t-shirts with the names of lost servicemen and women, others with handwritten logos like, "I'm doing this for Daddy because cancer sucks," or "Brain Tumor Survivor." Marines lined the route, humongous crowds, some with costumes or bearing crazy signs. If someone offered a high five, I'd high five back every time. Bands everywhere, cheers, hoots, and hollers. Every corner a mind-blowing view of our nation's capital. And somehow my husband managed to find me 3 times along the course to yell encouragement. Of course, everything is not sunshine and roses, as you guys say. I lost many minutes waiting in potty lines, losing my pace group after the last stop. At mile 20, I started getting really tired and then my quads cramped. But it's that attitude adjustment that turns things around. Wait in port-a-pot lines? Well, I get to rest. Getting tired? I'm strong and I can do this. Cramping? Okay, stop, take your electrolytes, massage it out, then keep running. Hurts to run? Yeah, well, I heard that on the podcast. It hurts to walk, too. So run. Crossing that finish line was superlative. Having that young Marine place that awesome medal around my neck and congratulating me with a firm handshake was one of the best feelings ever. I'm not sure if it was the euphoria from conquering such a task, but I felt pretty dang good after the race, and the following days, I was able to walk and ride my bike basically pain-free. More than 2 weeks later, I'm still on cloud 9. I feel empowered to try anything. And like Trevor says, amnesia is setting in. The pain and suffering of training is fading away. Maybe again someday. Thank you, guys. You rock. Sincerely, Kelly.
Well, Kelly, that was an awesome summary. That really made me want to go and run the Marine Corps Marathon.
I know. Me too. I was just experiencing it right along with her.
And it sounds like she's taken a lot of action on stuff that she's heard you teach about, you know, down to the fueling strategy, running on an empty stomach, taking Perpetuum.
You'd be surprised how many people I've heard back from who have changed their fueling strategy and have just, you know, turned their long run experience around. So it's been exciting.
But yeah, I mean, that crossing that finish line for her is just going to stay with her forever. And sounds like she'll probably do another race. And even though it's hard on her stomach, she's going to just tough it out and get through it. And that's like so many people we hear from. They have some kind of setback, like the first email we read, you know, from Lynn, who was recovering from an injury. But the key is, you know, you just train smart and be perseverant and you will make it.
And, you know, having that obstacle to overcome makes the experience so much more special, too.
It's true. Okay, well, Angie, on this episode, you were going to share the secrets of proper recovery. Are you sure we should do that? Share these secrets?
Yes, I'm definitely sure.
Okay, Angie's going to share the secrets, but you have to make sure you don't let anybody know about this.
They'll wonder at the secrets of your training success. If you're in the process of training for a full or a half marathon, you've probably worked hard to master things like long runs and even done some speed workouts. These aspects of training are definitely important for marathon success. However, there may be one important piece of the training puzzle that you haven't mastered. That vital aspect is proper recovery. When I was training for my first couple of marathons, I didn't give recovery much thought. Honestly, my biggest priority after finishing a run was getting a shower. I didn't know that what I did in the minutes and hours after a hard workout was almost as important as the workout itself. The body has the capacity to work hard and improve, but it also needs time to recover. When you don't take time to recover properly, this can take a toll on your body. You may start noticing signs of overtraining.
Now, overtraining, we talked about in detail in one of the lessons inside the academy, and it's like the main cause of people not being able to finish their marathon training.
That's right. It's the number one cause of injury, and it's really sneaky. I mean, overtraining can plague new runners as well as experienced veterans. New runners can get carried away with the excitement of building up their mileage and their running days. They get addicted to that running high, and it carries them away, and they do too much too soon. Instead of taking the time to build up a proper running base, they may jump right into training for a marathon. And a newer runner may even choose a training plan that's too advanced for their level of conditioning. Unfortunately, injury is right around the corner.
But when you're a new runner, you really don't know what training plan you need.
Exactly. I mean, you think, you know, you're doing a great thing, you're running, it feels good, you're building up your mileage, you're setting goals, all of which are good things. But unfortunately, you know, if you're not careful and you don't know these secrets, you could be at risk for derailing your marathon training due to an injury. For the more experienced runner, there's often that desire to improve the personal best. We're always testing the limits of our running capacity, and in the process may start ignoring subtle cues from the body. These quiet messages that your body tries to send you may become screams of agony if they're not dealt with early on. Unless you have a bulletproof body, which only about 10% of runners do, you shouldn't be running 6 days per week and consistently training at over 50 miles per week. You may be able to get away with it for a little while, but injury may be just around the corner.
Wouldn't it be great to be able to do that, though, if you did have a bulletproof body, if you're like Dean Karnazes or somebody?
Right. And we look at people like that and think, well, they can do it. I should be able to do it. And, you know, some people can, and it's wonderful, and we all admire them. But for the rest of us, we have to be really careful to listen to our body and implement proper recovery and training strategies. If you've been listening to our podcast for any amount of time, you probably know that I encourage scheduled rest days and cross-training as part of your training program. It's also important to develop a recovery routine so that you can maximize your training. Most of us know that recovery is important, but you may be wondering what you should be doing. First, I'm going to talk about the why of recovery, and then we'll talk about what to do. So, why should you recover? The type of recovery I'm referring to is something called short-term recovery or even active recovery. This has to do with the minutes and hours immediately after hard exercise. Now, during intense running sessions like long runs or speed or hill training, your body responds by making microscopic tears in the muscle fibers.
Ow. I hate to think about that.
Yeah, it is kind of a gruesome picture when you think of it. Your ligaments and tendons also deal with an increased workload, and the combination of these factors often cause delayed onset muscle soreness. The recovery period is the time the body uses for soft tissue repair, like your muscles, your tendons, ligaments, and the removal of chemicals that build up as a result of cell activity during exercise. Now, delayed onset muscle soreness isn't necessarily a bad thing, and it's the body's way of adapting to the demand for stronger muscle tissue. You have to tear down to build stronger, basically.
So when you're actually doing bodybuilding, the actual building part is not when you're pumping the iron, it's when your body's in rest, building back.
Exactly. Bodybuilders really have, you know, the principles of recovery down. They know that you can only work a certain muscle group so often, or your entire workout is going to be counterproductive because you can't continue breaking down without that chance to build back and recover properly. Instead, you need to alternate adaptation and recovery to get to a higher level of fitness. Runners need to realize that the greater the training intensity and effort, the greater the need for planned recovery. Okay, we're going to talk about the 12 keys to proper recovery. The first one is cool down. At the end of your run, make sure that you take the time to cool down properly. During the last 5 minutes of your run, drop to an easier pace, and after finishing your workout, walk for at least 5 minutes. The purpose of the cool down is to return your body to pre-exercise conditions. This includes reducing your heart rate, breathing rate, and core body temperature. A thorough cool down provides the following 4 benefits. 1, it prevents blood from pooling in your legs. 2, it removes lactate from your muscles and blood more quickly. 3, it reduces levels of adrenaline in your blood. And 4, it reduces muscle stiffness and decreases your likelihood of future injury. Now, I know it's easy to want to just, you know, go from finishing your run to the rest of your day, but it's really important to take that time to cool down, to walk, to let your body return to homeostasis so that you have a better chance of recovering properly and not getting injured.
I like to go from finishing my run to lying on the floor.
Yes, and, you know, that's the tendency of a lazy runner.
But hey, I resemble that remark. I resent that remark.
But there's, you know, more danger in doing that. And we'll talk about some of those things even later on. But the worst thing you can do after finishing a hard workout is lay down right away. Because that's like giving more of a shock to your body.
You could even pass out.
Yeah, or worse. So the second key is stretching. Although research doesn't find that stretching alone reduces muscle pain and soreness, it's a good thing to include in the post-run cool down. It's important to remember that the goal of stretching is to develop and maintain an appropriate range of motion around specific joints. You also need to realize that stretching or releasing tight muscles should go hand in hand with strengthening the weak muscles. focus on your hips, your glutes, hamstrings, quads, and calves. Develop a stretching routine that you perform after every run when your muscles are warm. This is one key to staying flexible and injury-free. There's also a growing body of research into the benefits of yoga, which is good both for recovery and injury prevention.
So, Angie, you stretch after every hard run?
After every hard workout and long run, I try to stretch, yes. And the times that I have skipped it in the past, I really find that I'm more sore, that my recovery takes longer. And so, yeah, I've really found that's one key for me to recover more quickly.
If I don't stretch, it's usually because I just don't want to take the time to do it.
It really comes down to trying to cut corners and save time. But if you think about it in the long run, possibly being more stiff and sore the next day, if you have any areas that are prone to injury, you really need to be careful to stretch those areas out so that you don't lose time in the long run by being injured.
All right, well said. What is the third key to recovery?
The third key is body temperature. Now, after you get back from a run, it's very likely that your clothes and body will be partially to totally drenched with sweat. This is, of course, depending on the weather conditions and your sweat rate. After you stop moving, your core temperature is going to start dropping, and wet clothes will cause further chilling. So one of the first things you should do is to get out of any wet clothes, especially if you won't be taking a shower right away. I've noticed that in the cold weather, if I don't pay attention to my body temperature and get out of my running clothes right away, I start to tense up and start shivering, which is not what you want your muscles to do after a run. You want your muscles to be relaxed and not tensed up and shivering. So body temperature may seem like kind of a no-brainer, but it's really something that you need to pay attention to, you know, especially if you're like me and you walk in the door and there's all the stuff that kind of hits you and you need to be doing. It can be easy just to, you know, attend to other things and then start to get chilled and start shivering, and then, you know, you've kind of lost ground as far as your recovery goes.
Another good reason to get out of your sweaty clothes is you really smell bad.
Thanks, I know.
It's hard to give you a hug when you come back from your long run. I still do it, though, because I'm a sacrificial husband.
Yes, well, everyone's sweat stinks. The fourth key is proper refueling. Another major focus of recovery immediately following exercise has to do with replenishing your energy stores and fluids that are lost during exercise. You can optimize protein synthesis, which is the process of increasing the protein content of muscle cells and prevent muscle breakdown and increase your muscle size by eating the right foods in the post-workout meal. Make sure you start eating within 30 minutes of finishing your long run or hard workout. This is the key window of time where your body needs nutrients to help the muscles recover. The post-run meal should be a carbohydrate and protein combination for the best results. I've found that the best solution for me is to use a recovery drink. Usually when I walk in the door for my run, I'm immediately bombarded with demands that have, you know, built up in my absence.
Hey, what is that supposed to mean?
It means the kids mob me as soon as I walk in the door. It's very hard to find the time to eat something right away. So my perfect solution is putting in a couple scoops of Hammer Recoverite in water, shaking it up, and drinking it right away. Recoverite supplies your body with a 3-to-1 ratio of complex carbohydrates and protein, along with glutamine, the potent antioxidant L-carnosine, and a full spectrum of electrolytes. Then I can attend to the needs of my kids and do other aspects of recovery. If you use a recovery drink right away, it is still important to eat a balanced meal or a snack within 1 to 2 hours post-workout, but it kind of gives you more of a window of time to worry about that.
And I still remember what Steve Bourne said, the fueling expert, when we talked to him about his take on carbo-loading. Now, obviously, he's against carbo-loading before a race, but he says that the real carbo-loading is after your workout.
That's right. That's when the muscles are ready to gobble up any carbohydrates that come their way.
And kind of store them for the next time you're going to put demands on your body.
That's right. So that refueling window is very, very important. That's when you're going to basically be putting carbohydrate or glycogen in the bank for your next workout.
All right, what is the fifth key to the secrets of recovery?
It is compression. Another option for speeding recovery after a race or long run is compression garments. You've probably seen runners wearing knee-high socks and sleeves on their calves during races. Some runners use compression garments during a race for increased muscle support and enhanced circulation. However, they haven't been proven to improve race performance. The true benefits occur if they're worn post-race, when they stimulate circulation to give a faster lactate recovery rate. So you can wear them during a long run or race if you like the way they feel, but the ideal time to put them on is during the recovery period.
You usually take them off after your race, don't you? Your compression socks?
Well, that's because I've worn them several hours and they're sweaty and nasty. But I don't take them off right away. I mean, I usually wear them at least an hour afterwards.
Okay.
You know, before I get to shower and everything.
They need to make like a full body compression suit.
Oh, they do, if you're willing to shell out the bucks.
Do they? Yes. Is it kind of hard to get into?
I imagine. I've never tried it before.
They have like a compression helmet, too, with a chin strap.
I think a compression garment for your neck would be nice right now. The sixth key to proper recovery is cold therapy. Now, cold therapy is known to constrict the blood vessels to reduce inflammation and tissue breakdown. Later, when the tissues warm up, there's a faster return of blood flow to flush harmful metabolic debris, like lactic acid, out of your muscles. So for best results, the water temperature in your ice bath should be between 50 to 59 degrees Fahrenheit for around 10 to 15 minutes. Now, if you can't brave an ice bath, even a cool shower can have some benefits. Whatever you do, don't jump in a hot tub during the first few hours post-workout. That can come around 48 hours later to soothe sore areas. But if you have a particularly sore area, like a knee or ankle that tends to swell, be sure to get an ice pack on the area right away. Ice the area for 15 minutes every 2 hours for the first 24 hours to decrease swelling. So there has actually been some studies that have shown that if you alternate between cold and hot during your shower, it can have some benefits because it, you know, helps constrict and then it speeds up circulation when you turn the warm water on again. I definitely understand that it's hard to turn a cold shower on. And if you, you know, don't have any trouble after long runs with swelling or sore areas, cold therapy may be something that you don't see as especially important to you. But if you do have swelling or sore areas, it can be something that's really beneficial.
Did you hear about that guy from the Netherlands? His name is Wim Hof, and he ran a marathon in his shorts, no shirt on and no shoes. And he ran it in the Arctic Circle. He's like a hardcore cold weather endurance guy.
Isn't he the one that can control his body temperature mentally?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
That is pretty amazing. Definitely something I would not be trying.
Can you imagine going out in the snow and with bare feet and running?
Well, the human body can take a lot, you know, especially if you build up your endurance. So, yeah, that's amazing.
We're done talking about cold therapy. The seventh key is massage.
Yes, if you use a high-density foam roller or a massage stick, it can provide similar benefits as deep tissue massage without the hefty price tag. It can also increase your flexibility and decrease muscle tension. Many runners have found them useful in preventing injury and improving in performance. I remember when we interviewed Tim Borland, who ran 63 marathons in 63 days, he said that one of the keys to his endurance and recovery was using the stick daily. After running, use a foam roller or a massage stick on your large muscle groups, especially in the lower body. Place your body on the roller and slowly roll up and down for about 10 to 15 seconds along the muscle group you're targeting. If you have any tight areas, spend some extra time in that spot. I have to regularly work on my hip flexors and IT bands. Putting pressure on a tight area can help release the tissue. I also have a tiger tail, and it's a great small handheld roller. I found that if I use it soon after a long run, I don't have any muscle soreness.
And we take it with us to marathons. Angie makes me pack it in my suitcase.
Because mine is usually full of the kids' stuff.
How much was a tiger tail? Like 30 bucks?
I think it's less than 30.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Handy little thing to roll your muscles out.
That's right.
Let's go to the eighth key. Over-the-counter medications and supplements.
Yes, now this can be a controversial topic. Because, obviously, you need to be careful what you put into your body. Aspirin, ibuprofen, and Aleve may help temporarily reduce muscle soreness, although they actually won't speed healing. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, like the ones I mentioned, can impair kidney function if taken in excess before or during a run. The harmful effects are increased if you're dehydrated. Now, Tylenol is a preferred pain reliever because it has fewer side effects, but if you use over the recommended dosage, it can cause liver damage. If you find that you have to take a pain reliever to get through a run, you may be heading toward an injury and need to reevaluate your training. Make sure that you listen to your body and don't mask persistent messages it's trying to send you. Now, if you're looking for some good supplements to help relieve muscle soreness and heal injuries, I'd encourage you to consider taking vitamin C and omega-3 fatty acids, either in a fish oil capsule source or Mila, which is a brand of chia seeds. Another great product that I use is called Tissue Rejuvenator from Hammer Nutrition. Other pain relief options include soaking in a bath of Epsom salt and using topical pain relief things like Icy Hot or Bengay. However, a recent study on over-the-counter topical pain medications containing salicylates found that they're not effective for pain relief when they're compared with a placebo. So you really can't rely on things like Bengay necessarily to provide pain relief. But, you know, some people like the way they feel, even though they smell horrible.
Some people might like the way they smell.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's what you get used to. But I found that soaking in a bath of Epsom salt water really helps with, you know, tissue soreness and helping your muscles feel better.
Okay, and the ninth key is sleep.
Yes, one of my favorite topics. It's normal to feel very tired after a long run. You might need to schedule in a nap, just take some time to put your feet up, or even have an early bedtime on the days when you do a long run. When I trained for my first marathon, around 2 hours after my long run, I'd usually be hit by a wave of fatigue. I would put a movie on for my kids and lay down on the couch and put my feet up for about an hour. In fact, during your marathon training, you may find yourself more tired than usual, so it's worth it to try and get a solid 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night. The 10th key to proper recovery is rest days. The day after your long run should be devoted to rest or light activity. A short walk or bike ride is fine to loosen up your muscles, but you shouldn't be out doing a serious workout. Give your body the time it needs to recover. You may also want to consider taking the day before your long run for very light cross training or rest. Even if you have a workout scheduled in and you feel fatigued or especially sore, you may want to skip that day just so that you give your body the time to recover, because everyone's different. And just because your training plan says that you need to run that day or do a workout doesn't mean that you necessarily should do it if it's not going to be the best thing for you.
Ever since my last marathon, I've been taking one big rest day.
I've noticed. Yes, you'll regret it later if you lose your mileage base.
So the 11th key is a running log. If you're a type A personality like Angie and you keep up with lists of things, you won't have any problem with keeping up a running log.
Yes, and for everyone else, it's important to keep one anyways.
Become a type A person.
In this area, especially if you care about your running success. Keep a running log to record your distance, the time it took you, your training surface, your clothing, your fueling, things like that. This information will help you evaluate the success of what you're doing down the road. Use your long runs as a time to experiment so that you're doing nothing new on race day. If you find that you're having issues during your long runs, look back in your running log to see what you ate that morning, how much fluid you took in, the time it took you, or your weather conditions. Monitoring your workouts with a training log and paying attention to how your body feels and how motivated you are is really helpful in determining your recovery needs and will also help you to modify your training program accordingly. So basically, if something is not working for you, then you shouldn't continue doing it. And looking back in your training log is going to help you see your pattern so that you can either keep doing what works or modify it and do something differently. The final key to proper recovery is listening to your body. The most important thing you can do to recover more quickly is to listen to your body. If you're feeling tired, sore, or you notice decreased performance, you may need more recovery time between workouts. If you pay attention, in most cases, your body will let you know what it needs, when it needs it. The problem for many of us is we don't listen to these warnings, or we dismiss them thinking, I can't be tired, I didn't run very fast yesterday, or my training partner doesn't need 2 rest days after that workout, I don't want them thinking I'm a wimp. Comparing yourself to other people, or maybe even what you could do a year ago, and ignoring signals from your body is a quick way to get injured. So it's important to really evaluate how you're feeling mentally, physically, and proceed from there.
Okay, so to review the 12 keys of proper recovery, there is cool down, stretching, regulating body temperature, refueling, compression, cold therapy, massage, over-the-counter medication and supplements, sleep, rest days, a running log, and, of course, listening to your body.
Yes.
All right, so we hope that this will help you to be a wiser runner and to recover efficiently from workouts and long runs and races. Okay, so now it's time for the quick question here at the end of our episode, and this was a question that was sent in by a listener, and we won't actually read the question, but it's a question that might be in a lot of people's minds. And is there a risk of death while running a marathon?
Yes, every year there are a few runners who died while running a marathon, and there have been several runners this fall who have died near the finishing line or shortly afterwards. I've actually done a podcast on this topic, but I do want to quickly address this question because I know it's on several people's minds, especially if you were running one of the races where, you know, someone passed away. You know, you maybe see the commotion or you hear about it later and it really hits home thinking, wow, that could have been me or someone I know. And, you know, is it wise to even be out there running a marathon? You may even been confronted by caring friends or relatives who have warned you about the dangers of running a marathon. So before I talk about this, I do want to say that running a marathon does involve risks. If it were completely safe and easy, then everyone would do a marathon. However, every worthwhile goal does involve some risk. And when you sign up for the race, you basically have to sign a waiver that says, you know, if I lose a limb or die during this race, I'm not going to sue the race directors.
Yeah.
So the main risks would be for the runner who hasn't built a solid running base before doing a marathon. It is necessary to give your heart, lungs, bones, and muscles time to adapt and prepare for the demands that will be placed on them. You should also have clearance from your medical provider before undertaking a marathon. Also know what your blood pressure and cholesterol numbers are. For runners over the age of 35, the main cause of death while running is a heart attack due to coronary artery disease. For younger runners, death is usually caused by an electrical problem in the heart. These factors may be worsened by dehydration and excessive adrenaline that sometimes happens at the end of the race. So here are some things that you can do to reduce your risk. The first thing, like I said, is get the clearance of your healthcare provider before training for a marathon. Next, you want to build a solid running base. Third, make sure that your blood pressure and cholesterol are normal or are being controlled by medication. Number four, never continue running if you have any of the following symptoms: chest or shoulder and arm pain, excessive shortness of breath, erratic heart rate, abdominal pain or nausea, or dizziness. Finally, consider wearing a heart rate monitor to make sure that you're training in the ideal zone. The bottom line for me is that we need to do everything we can to reduce the risk. However, the chances of a runner dying of heart problems is 1/100th that of the normal population. So statistically, the most dangerous part of the marathon experience is driving to and from the race.
So you're saying there's a lot higher risk of dying in a car accident than running a marathon.
Exactly. And I definitely feel bad for the families and friends of these men who died this year at the marathons. I'm sure it was a horrible shock for them. You know, and I don't want to sound callous, but dying while running a marathon is not the worst way to go, in my opinion. As a nurse, I've cared for people dying of cancer, Alzheimer's, and many other horrible conditions. And I know for myself, I'd be happy to die while doing something I loved. Hopefully it won't be for a few more decades, but we don't generally get to control how and when we die. All we can do is control how we live. So for me, running marathons is one way that I get to live life to the fullest.
So you want to die with your running shoes on, huh?
That's right.
Doing laps around the nursing home?
No nursing homes, preferably.
Okay, well, you might need to listen to this a little bit again just to make sure you have these principles down. We definitely want you to guard against dying during a marathon or getting injured during a marathon. But we also want you to know that the chances that it'll happen to you are very slim, and you shouldn't be afraid to work toward achieving your goal and living life to its fullest.
That's right.
And if you visit us at our website, you can also read other articles and blog posts about marathon training, and also get a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. It'll give you a solid overview of what marathon training is all about. We want you to remember that you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.